Several send greetings this morning. The ones that I can remember starts with Marge Hagensick, Bill and Ruth Bender, David and Kathy Stein. Well, over the past several months, trying to take the topics of the Studies in the Scriptures volumes, express our own thoughts and understandings of it, and bring to mind the appropriate scriptures. So today we'll try to look at the first half of the material on the fourth volume called The Day of Vengeance or the Battle of Armageddon. The title of the book was changed about the time that Teddy Roosevelt was running for president. And he arranged that his motto was, "We stand at the Battle of Armageddon." So Brother Russell thought, "The Day of Vengeance," well, it's a good title, but the current one for the day is certainly the Battle of Armageddon, and so he changed that title, and the sales of Volume 4 continue to grow. Now, as we begin, consider that Joshua at Jericho. Remember, that's Joshua chapter 6. It shows us that the gospel age is divided into seven periods of time, that is, the 7 days they went to Jericho, and that there are seven major events during the last day when they went seven times around on Jericho's last day. Now, when we look at Egypt, the last plague is the death of the world's firstborn, the heirs of the kingdom of this world. And Revelation 16 identifies this last plague as Armageddon. Go ahead and read Revelation 16 so that we get the context. Start with verse 12. This is now the seven angels, seven messengers pouring out the plagues, and we get down to number 6 here. "And the sixth poured out his bowl," that uses bowl instead of vial in the ASV, "and the sixth poured out his bowl upon the great river, the river Euphrates." Remember, that's the river that flowed through Babylon. It was not only its source of water, but of commerce. "And the water thereof was dried up, that the way might be made ready for the kings that come from the sun rising." James says east, based on the idea of the sun rises in the east. And in this case, we think of kings that come from the sun rising, the rising of the King of Righteousness. Jesus is that sun. "And I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet three unclean spirits, as it were frogs, for they are spirits of demons, working signs, which goeth forth unto the kings of the whole world, to gather them together unto the war of the great day of God Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked, and they see his shame. And they gather them together into the place which is called in Hebrew Armageddon." We continue through the seventh. "And the seventh poured out his bowl upon the air, and there came forth a great voice out of the temple from the throne, saying, It is done. There were lightnings and voices and thunders, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since there were men upon the earth. So great an earthquake, so mighty." So it's got to be bigger than the French Revolution even. "And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And Babylon the Great was remembered in the sight of God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away." We generally think of that as every republic. "And the mountains," the kingdoms, "were not found." Much already gone, aren't they now? "And great hail, every stone about the weight of a talent." That's 5 or 80 pounds. Imagine what that would happen if it were literal. "And it hit. And great hail, every stone about the weight of a talent, cometh down out of heaven upon man. Men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof is exceeding great. Now, just another comment on this before we go on. I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits. Dragon, that's not too difficult to figure out. Dragon has always been used as the symbol of the tyrant or tyranny. Today, in today's world, that would be leftist atheism, I think. Governs more than 1 billion people, back to 1 billion people in China alone. And out of the mouth of the beast, as we see in Daniel 7, that we have first Babylon, then Medo-Persia, then Grecia, and then Rome as the fourth beast. So on the one side we have leftist atheism, on the other side we have Roman Catholicism, the Eastern Orthodox, which split from it, and some Protestants certainly emulate the practices of the beast. I think that would include the Anglican system as well. They're all having their problems today. They were powerful at the time. Now we come to the false prophet. There is a third great influence in the world today. Let's see if that continues. That would be Islam. And what better description could one use of Muhammad than false prophet? So it's worth watching, these three, because these are the great philosophies of the world today. And each one of them wants the same thing, total government control. They only differ as to which one is going to do the controlling. But we will watch. The first set of thoughts that we have now regarding the day of vengeance. Scriptures on that include, Jehovah hath a day of vengeance, a year of recompense for the cause of Zion. Isaiah 34:8-10. But let's note, it is a day of vengeance and a year of recompense for the cause of Zion. So we should think that Armageddon, or even for that matter, the entire time of trouble, is short compared to the millennial restoration of the human world to perfection. Who is this that cometh from Eden with dyed or crimsoned garments from Bozrah? That's a major city of Edom. This that is glorious in his apparel, marching in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine vat? I have trodden the winepress alone. I to anyone other Jesus or God? I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the peoples there was no man with me. Yes, I trod them in mine anger, and trampled them in my wrath, and their life blood is sprinkled upon my garments, and I have stained all my raiment. For the day of vengeance was in my heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. Let's keep that in mind. It is but a day of vengeance compared to the long time, 1,000 years, to redeem. First the day of vengeance, then the year of my redeem. Now some interesting thoughts are expressed here, worthy of consideration. Volume 4, pages 13 to 14. It is not our purpose in calling attention to this subject to arouse a mere sensation or to seek to gratify idle curiosity. The main object of this volume is not, therefore, to enlighten the world, but to forewarn, comfort, encourage and strengthen the household of faith, so that they may not be dismayed, but may be in full harmony and sympathy with even the severest measures of divine discipline, hastening of the world, seeing by faith the glorious outcome, precious fruits of righteousness and enduring peace. So, the intention of these scriptures is not to scare us, not to scare the world, but rather that we know that these things must come. Then in 16 to 18, collecting a bit here for time, Like Esau, the masses of Christendom have sold their birthright of special and peculiar advantage. You remember how it was that Esau was feeling faint, and his brother Joseph had some lentil soup. So Esau says, "Come, give me your lentil soup. Give it to you for nothing. Well, sell me your birthright for it." "Well, what does it matter? My birthright matter if I perish anyway?" Sold. No doubt thinking, "Once I'm strong again, I'll get it back." But he couldn't do it. Like Esau, the masses of Christendom have sold their birthright of special and peculiar advantage. The symbolic Edom of Isaiah's prophecy corresponds to the symbolic Babylon of Revelation and of the prophecies of Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, major prophets. The fact that the King of Kings is represented as treading the winepress alone indicates that the power exerted for the overthrow of the nations will be divine power and not mere human energy. Keep in mind that God is overseeing things that are happening in the world today. Doesn't say he's approving them, does it? He's overseeing them for the long-term end. He is causing the works of Satan work against the world, evil parts of the world. Next topic, the doom of Babylon and so forth. God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." That's Genesis 9:1. And you compare what the NASB has to say about it. It doesn't say replenish the earth, because this is the same as given to Adam earlier. And Adam was the first man, reassured by Paul's epistle to Timothy. So in each case it is, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." But as people journeyed in the east, that's not to the east, but in the east, that's Sumer or Shinar, modern Iraq, we might call it somewhat central Iraq. They chose to build a city and a tower, quote, "lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth," unquote, in defiance of Jehovah's command to fill the earth. Jehovah determined to confound their language and did so by scattering the peoples abroad to cause their languages to drift apart. That's different from sometimes we have heard. The thought is that the languages were first changed miraculously somehow, and that the change of language caused them to drift apart. But reading carefully, it seems to correspond to what we see historically, that it was the scattering of the peoples abroad allowed the languages to drift apart. An example of this is that Abraham came from the area of Sumer or Shinar, and when he went west, he was able to communicate apparently all the way into Egypt. But just three generations later, Joseph chose to use an interpreter to speak to his own brothers. So in just three generations, the languages had drifted apart from Egypt to Sumer or Iraq. Sumerians called the city and tower Bab Elu. Now Elu, like El, God. It means gate of God, so presumably Bab means gate. But others called it Babel, like our word Babel, confusion, or perhaps perversion of language. In time, the Sumerians became hated by others who overthrew them. Later, Babylon was conquered by a Semitic people from Arpachshad in Genesis chapter 10. And we call them Chaldeans, who nevertheless ruled with the Nimrod religion. When Nabonid, that's the father of Belshazzar, and apparently son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar, when Nabonid was away, we think at Tema in Arabia, that northwestern Arabia, his son Belshazzar, Belshazzar in the Babylonian, reigned in Babylon, but drank from the golden vessels from God's temple in Jerusalem, and praised Babylon's gods of gold. Well, God sent a message, Mena, Mena, Tekel, Upharsin, numbered, numbered, weighed, and divided. Similarly, in our day, Babylon has pursued gold and has been weighed and found wanting. So Babylon's days are numbered. People will be taken by Christ and his faithful church. Daniel chapter 5. Little side note, Mena, Mena, Tekel, Upharsin. And in the interpretation, was Mena means numbered, Tekel means weighed. The letters for each of those, Mena, M-N-E, Tekel, T-Q-L, three letters long. Upharsin was six letters long. And none of the Babylonians could understand it. They couldn't understand it reading from left to right. They couldn't understand it reading from right to left. There's a little note in the Jewish Talmud. It says the reason they weren't able to understand it is that it was T-Q-L, T-Q-L, then U-P-H-R-S-I-N, reading from top to bottom. Reminds me of a Japanese girl when I was in school. I asked her, do you write from right to left or from left to right? Well, she says, we usually write from right to left. I said, what do you do when you are quoting an English word? Oh, in that case, we simply write from left to right. Oh, and when we want to, we write from top to bottom. It doesn't matter to us. So, to the Hebrews, it would not occur to them only to think of reading from right to left or left to right. And that could be the answer as to why the Babylonians were not able to read what Daniel was able to read. Another topic. The necessity and justice in the day of vengeance, not just willy-nilly. Just as the Jewish age ended with the prophesied, Behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them shall ye kill and crucify, and some of them shall ye scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of Abel, the righteous, unto the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah. That name means blessed of Jehovah, high priest. That does not mean Zechariah the prophet, whom ye slew between the sanctuary and the altar. Truly I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. We have it in Matthew 25, Luke also. Luke 21, I think 45 to 51, but also 2 Chronicles 24, 20 to 22, where indeed there was a Zechariah who was acting as priest. His father was Jehoiada, the high priest. Him, under the influence of the wicked king, he was slain between the sanctuary and the altar. Just as the first world became unjust and violent and was destroyed by the flood, so this present world is to be recompensed. The heavens that now are and the earth, by the same word, have been stored up for fire, being reserved against the day of judgment and destruction of ungodly men. But the day of the Lord will have come as a thief. And yes, that is the literal translation of the tense. Day of the Lord will have come as a thief. In other words, we can be living in the day of the Lord, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, not just quietly fade away, and the elements shall be dissolved with fervent heat. Atom bombs could qualify as one of those elements. And the earth and the works that are therein shall be exposed. 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 7 through 10. And the earth and the works that are therein not shall be burned up. That's later manuscripts. Earth and the works that are therein shall be exposed. Have we been seeing this in the religious realm? Works being exposed? Pedophilia of the priests? head of the National Association of Evangelicals, being two of the most prominent ministers, radio ministers, and AWs are having their problems. Gracious knows what's happening in the political world, not just here, but around the whole world. Opposed. Just on an aside, reminds me of a cartoon from back in the 1930s where the wife comes and says to the husband, man at the front door says that he's suffering foreclosure. Husband says, well, one thing's sure, he's either a financier, a politician, or a tramp. The world is suffering from exposure, and that's prophesied. Consider the lesson from Habakkuk. Habakkuk says to the Lord, yes, Lord, I know your people have sinned, but why do you permit the less righteous than they to administer the punishment? Second chapter. The Lord says, yes, I know, but wait till you see what happens to them. Third chapter. Yes, Lord, I accept it. Even if there are cattle in the stalls, no fruit in the trees, rejoice in the God of my salvation, because the long term is not determined by what we have in the short term. Another topic, Babylon arraigned before the great court. The mighty one, God, Jehovah, hath spoken. Call us to the heavens above and to the earth, that he may judge his people. Gather my saints together unto me, those that have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. Doesn't say that have made a covenant with me by promising to sacrifice, but made a covenant with me by sacrifice. But unto the wicked God saith, what hast thou to do to declare my statutes? And thou hast taken my covenant in thy mouth. Seeing thou that thou hatest instructions, cannot be corrected. After all, we're not supposed to correct the clergy, are we? Supposed to correct us? Problem. Seeing that thou hatest instructions, and castest my words behind thee, there are counsels, traditions, best to take place over Scripture. When thou sawest a thief, thou consentest with him, and hast been partaker with adulterers. Priest fornication and pedophilia. Thou givest thy mouth to evil, and thy tongue frameth deceit. Thou sittest and speakest against thy brother. Thou slanderest thine own mother's son. Excommunicate the faithful. These things hast thou done, and I kept silence. Thou thoughtest that I was altogether such a one as thyself. But I will reprove thee, and set them in order before thine eyes. Psalms chapter 50. Sectarianism has required of all. 1. You must join the organization. It should be, join God and Christ. And 2. You must profess some truth, Jesus, and some error. Namely, Jesus is God. Or for most of them, he tortured. That in order to be saved. To ask about difficult scriptures shows a lack of faith. De facto means a lack in faith, the organization. Consider Babylon's confusion, national. Proclaim ye this among the nations. Prepare war. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Haste ye and come. All ye nations round about, and gather yourselves together. Nations allying themselves. Let the nations bestir themselves and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there will I sit to judge all the nations round about. Now the two world wars were physically destructions. Physically destructive. The two depressions, long depression, the 1870s, 80s, and 90s, and the Great Depression of 1930s were economically destructive. Some things have been physically destructive, and some things have been economically destructive. Now, the USA outspent the USSR in missile offense and defense, which, along with social unrest, brought down the Soviet Union. Now I think we see Lucifer is determined to take down the West. Why might that be? I think if Lucifer had one choice, get one wish accomplished. That would be eliminate Israel. And right now, leftist atheism is happy to do that. Islam wants to go even farther and destroy not only Israel, but every Jew in the whole world. That's in their so-called holy writings, that only when every last Jew in the world has been exterminated, then can Allah's kingdom begin. So imagine how it occurs to the Islamicists to see a nation starting to come back in 1878 with only about 20,000 Jews in the land, majority of them undercover, to now a population of approximately 6 million Jews in the land. That's a multiplication of about factor 300. And to get Allah's kingdom, every Jew has to be eliminated. And see, instead, the population greatly increased. Babylon's confusion, also ecclesiastical. We have today councils of churches, the world parliament of religions, not just being satisfied with being Christian. Baha'i wants to bring Christians, Muslims, and Taoists together, Confucianists, whatever. We have the National Council of World Council of Churches, National Association of Evangelicals. Lutherans and the Calvinists can't really get along. Now, there is one major difference that sometimes, in talking to people, we can make use of, help them. And that is that the Lutheran will insist that, that Jesus Christ tasted of death for every man. Certainly agree. He was ransomed for all. Whereas the Calvinist says, oh no, he died only for the elect. That we cannot agree with. So when we are talking with some, Lutherans, Methodists probably, can emphasize this that they emphasize. Jesus Christ died once for all, and tried to show how he'll benefit all. Nice expressions is, if Jesus Christ died once for all, then should not all benefit? Isaiah 34, verse 4. All the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their host shall fade away, as the leaf fadeth from off the vine, and as a fading leaf from the fig tree. Leaf fades, it's because it's drying up. Are we observing that today? Now, a reasonable question is, how is it when a scroll is rolled together? Could be either of two ways. Often we see that a scroll rolled together is rolled onto one stick. Also, we see pictures of the scroll rolled together from both sides so that there are two sticks on which the scroll is. We will be able to watch and see which is intended here, whether it's like Catholic and Protestant sticks, or whether it's all rolled together as one in the world parliament of religions. Quoting again, and I saw when he had opened the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair. That would be a total eclipse. And the whole or full moon became as blood, also eclipsed. Now literally, you can't do both at the same time. In the symbolic case, as the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, as a fig tree casteth her unripe figs when she is shaken of a great wind, and the heaven was removed as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. Have the nations been moved by depressions and world wars and this communist threat? That's from Revelation 6, verses 12. Also note Revelation 18, 1-5, what we should be doing about it. 5, it starts with the common expression that's used upon angel coming down out of heaven, and he proclaims, Babylon is fallen. Be not physically fallen yet, but morally fallen. And our response should be, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plague. Is the temptation for us to say, well, I want to come out of Babylon because I don't want to receive the plagues. Our principal motivation should be that we be not partakers of her sins. We should not endorse the things being done, even if it seems that Babylon is a better choice than leftist atheism, destroyed Russia and China, several other nations, not doing too well in Cuba. And look what happened to the wealthiest nation in South America over about 2 years ago, I think it was. They had food riots in the capital. So it is no solution to the problem. So when we see some of the things happening in the denominations today, what is happening to the major denominations? I think it's safe to say every one of them decreasing, not only in numbers, but especially in interest numbers. So is there light served as clearly and as brightly as Methodist friend asked him why a certain somebody had left the Methodist Church and was broadcasting on the radio. People are leaving the Methodist Church for a lot of reasons, true not only of one of the Protestant churches, Protestants, Catholics, and in general. In fact, in this country, some of the Anglican churches have chosen to go under the Archbishop in Nigeria rather than remain there. Now, Lot was called to come out of Sodom, and he came with some reluctance. The angels kind of had to pull him out, Amalek. And even once he was out, instead of fleeing directly to the mountains, he says, Lord, there's this little town over here. Won't you let me just stay there? The Lord let him do that for a time, but then he had to leave that town too. Sodom was destroyed. In the process, next shortest scripture in the Bible is Lot's wife. Come out of Babylon, not look back to glorious days. But not only that, but consider, there was Elijah. On the day, the time came when Elijah was to be taken up, he was called to come out of the first city, go up to Bethel. And at Bethel, he was called to come back down again, Jericho. And then he was called to come out a third time down to the Jordan River. No city there. This may be a lesson for us. Let's watch and see. We have been called to come out of Babylon back in the 1880s through into World War I. Then what happened? Brethren who have been called out. They were taken over, seized power. And so the call continued, come out of Babylon number 2. Ye be not partakers of sins. And if we are not careful, we are not watchful, vigilant, call can come out and come to us again. Come out of Babylon number 3, us, ye be not partakers of her sins. Now one cause for optimism might be, how long has it been? Over 80 years, hasn't it? The first part of the Bible student movement was only 40 years long. We are much smaller than that. But so far, we have endured 80 years. But lest we be overconfident, out of Babylon achieving. Another topic, just a little time to mention it. Nations assembled for the great fire. There is a great antipathy between the rich and the poor today. Who are the world's richest people today? Number 1, Amazon.com, Jeff Bezos. $131 billion. Number 2, Bill and Melinda Gates of Microsoft. $96.5 billion. That's not millions, that's billions with a B. Number 3, Warren Buffett. Geico, Duracell, Dairy Queen, and so forth. Berkshire Hathaway. $82.5 billion. Number 4 is not one we normally hear about. $76 billion, Bernard Arnault, France. Louis Vuitton and Sephora, among products. These are fabulously wealthy. Well, there are many poor in the world today. Yet many of these who are wealthy are generous. Would America and the world be as well off without their products? Yet many are ostentatious with their wealth. only infuriate the poor. Now, the U.S. total wealth is $98 trillion. That's the U.S. total wealth. World's total wealth is $317 trillion. Now, the U.S. total wealth, $98 trillion, not billion. So, indeed, no one person has even 1% country's wealth, let alone that of the world. The average, at least in the U.S., is $40,000 per person. Not too bad. Except that there are millions, even in this country, nowhere near the average. Now, this much can be said for the wealthy. Top 3% of U.S. income taxpayers pay over 50% of the taxes, whereas the lowest 50%, that's half, pay only 3%. Bloomberg.com. Now, Adam was told, "In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground." Imperfect man needs to do useful things. We need to have a purpose in life. The unemployed are almost always unhappy or even angry. People may be unemployed for a variety of reasons. Too infirmed to work. Too aged. I'm getting there, you know. Guess I'm not the only one. There may be few or no jobs available. That would be especially true, maybe. Or maybe unskilled, not able to do the job or jobs they want. Or there are a number two who just plain don't want to work. They want others to work for them. The world owes them a living, what they think. Or they like getting welfare. Maybe even getting more welfare income than get from after taxes employment. Or maybe they're working for the tax-free underworld. But there's a variety of reasons for which people are unemployed. Some of them perfectly legitimate. Others quite the reverse. Man needs a purpose. Many unemployed join protest movements, whether good or bad. It gives them a purpose. Example of that, my earthly work, I helped to build TV cameras for outer space. Some of them could detect volcanoes, some could even detect and track missiles. But one lady came to the fair this year and said, "There are no missiles in Gaza. It's all lies." But it seems to give her purpose to insist on it. Now, if she's willing to listen, I might have asked, "What are those flames that seem to be coming out of Gaza and heading to do all the talking?" Purpose. But man does need purpose. Adam was given a purpose right at the very beginning. Now, many ideas are put forward, great solution to unemployment. One, raise the minimum wage. What happens when it's tried? It increases the incentive to replace people with less expensive machines or computers. That increases unemployment when the workers cannot compete. Another, force employers to hire unqualified workers. When businesses lose money, it blows down all of the employees. Another is increased regulations. Governments do that. But it increases costs and reduces the incentive to hire people. Again, let the government hire everybody. But government inefficiency and political graft has been a disaster wherever it has been tried. Mention some of them. Human organized religion and or government has led to tyranny every time it has been tried. Tell me if you know of an exception. There is no solution but Christ's kingdom. There shall be signs in sun and moon and stars, and upon the earth distress of nations in perplexity. No way out. There is no solution from the hard right, the religious rule, hard left, atheistic rule, or Islam. Wisdom is justified of all her children, or wisdom is justified by all her results. Experience says any of these three is tyranny.